Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, Disneyland Forward moves, well, forward, a giant new addition to the Grand Californian for Lunar New Year.
A new treat at Rancho del Zocalo, haunted mansion construction, shocker, we talk about our trip to the Disney 100 exhibition in Chicago, and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Howdy, partners! For your safety, remain seated with your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the podcast, and be sure to watch your ears. If any of you folks are wearing hats or glasses, best remove them, because Tag and Teresa have the wildest ride in the wilderness!
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of February 1st, 2024. I'm Tag Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. We would like to thank everyone who supports the show. We would like to welcome and thank some new weekly tiers, including Pat J, Christiana B, Evelyn C, and Janelle S for supporting the show. Also, a special thank you and shout out to Janie M, Kristen J, David A for your support. If you would like to help support the show to make sure we can keep bringing you the latest news and information, discussion, and interviews about Disneyland, head on over to dlweekly.net/support.
Now let's get to the news. Well, the future of the Disneyland Resort has taken another step forward last week. Disneyland Forward had a workshop with the Anaheim City Council where some more details were laid out. Disney proposes to invest $1.9 billion on attractions, entertainment, lodging, and retail within 10 years of approval, along with up to $90 million to update city streets and improve streets near the parks. $30 million will be used over 5 years for affordable housing, $8 million for Anaheim park improvements in the first year, and funding of worker education, development, and recruiting programs. The next steps are a planning commission workshop in February, a hearing in March, and a city council hearing in May.
This is super interesting, also obviously very exciting. There was some stuff uncovered with this new meeting, new stuff that came out with the announcements here that I didn't know was part of this, that actually I was pretty excited about. So the first thing that was a little bit of a shocker to me is they were talking about something that sounded eerily familiar, the Eastern Gateway project. It sounds like they want to kind of bring that back and have parking structures on Harbor Boulevard, kind of behind where all the hotels and all that stuff is, that would then include pedestrian bridges to get you over the busy Harbor Boulevard intersection. So that was interesting. Two reasons, because that was something that they were pushing for, but the city kind of pushed back and it ended up not happening. So it's curious to me that it's coming back. However, how they're presenting it is much different. They're not asking for all of the like tax breaks and incentives that they were asking before. And it sounds like this is much more of a partnership. Another thing that I thought was really cool, again, obviously we're very excited about more Disneyland specific stuff, but all of the things that they're committing to for the community and all the money that they're committing to go back into the community to help with different things like community parks, housing things, and all sorts of, I just thought that was so cool. I didn't, again, perhaps I missed it because the original proposal was like, I don't know, thousands of pages long.
Yeah.
I did not read it. So thank you to Mice Chat for kind of consolidating it in these articles to make it a little bit more digestible.
Now, I also went and watched, they had a fairly well-produced video that I don't know if you had ever signed up on the Disneyland Forward website to get like notifications, but I did.
But I didn't get a video.
Oh, well, they sent me a thing to view this video that they recorded, and they emailed me a link or whatever, and I watched it. It was about a half an hour, and it was kind of interesting. I was expecting like a half an hour's worth of them talking about all these things, but really what happened was they filmed it inside of Disneyland. They filmed it in that, I guess there's that area they use quite a bit above Galaxy's Edge. So I think the park was still open because there was like people moving around, but it was at night. Mm-hmm. So they had Ken Potrock there talking. He handed it over to another person. I don't remember her name. And she talked for a little bit about all these different things. And then basically what ended up happening is it was about 23-ish minutes of let's look at all the cool things the Disney company is doing in our other theme parks around the world that could be representative of stuff that maybe possibly we would bring here. So this... look at Zootopia over here and look at Frozen Land that we just opened and look at this and that and the other thing. Look at the Volunteers work we've just done recently. So it was kind of a big, like, look how great we are as Disney and how we want to, like, add all of this stuff. And then at the very end, the last, like, 7 minutes were, we're not asking for any more land. We just want to do what we want with the land we currently own. We're not asking for any tax credits. We're going to pay for it all of ourselves. And we're going to also do these little extra things to make the city of Anaheim better. And so that was kind of the get-go there with all of that.
Yeah, that it makes me nervous when you were saying, oh, that look at like what and news places, the internet has been talking about this too. They're talking about, oh, well, we could get something like the Frozen Arendelle area or like Zootopia. That it gives me I don't get warm, fuzzy feelings with blue sky stuff anymore, since that's what we've gotten a couple of times now when we're talking theme park stuff and we're expecting to get announcements and we're getting these kind of, well, possibly, you know, maybe. Yeah. So I like knowing what it is. I don't like I don't like it getting dangled like that.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to get excited about something for it to just not be anywhere near what it's
going to be. How excited now have we gotten? So way back, towards the beginning of us doing the podcast.
That was one of the first things we were
really
covering.
Excited about the Eastern Gateway project. Mm-hmm. Then that got that canceled. Hotel. Then we were excited about the hotel, and that got canceled. Then D23, we had that whole excitement where we left going, wait a minute, they didn't even announce anything because they were talking about,
the first blue sky session.
Yeah. And so...
I don't know. I do think, again, I'm yes, of course, the investment that they're going to be putting back into like the parks and entertainment. Very, very exciting. But for me, I don't know why my takeaway from this new council workshop information is all of the stuff surround the community work that they're going to be doing. Because even just, again, weird stuff. I don't know why I find this interesting, but just like you said earlier, they're going to be buying streets and improving streets near the theme park. So it's almost kind of like Reedy Creek vibes a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, and then there is a section Mice Chat posted on here. There were some graphics, I assume, that Disney created, basically.
Yeah.
They were going to spend $8 million. This is the development agreement for parks. They were going to do some stuff with 64 pickleball courts, 40 basketball courts, 30 fitness stations, 20 playgrounds, 10 skate parks, 8 splash pads, 6 dog parks, and 5 small parks that they wanted to fund and do that. And then there's a 3-acre park with a playground, courts, trails, and sitting areas. So I'm not sure exactly if that, like, how that all balances out around Anaheim, but I think that's pretty cool. Magic Way, Hotel Way, and Clementine Street's going to be removed for street expansion. Mm-hmm. Catella widening, intersection improvements, turn lane expansions, bike lanes, shuttles, ride sharing, and other transit management. They're going to spend $45 million on that. And then they pay $5 million more if the $2.5 billion investment is not met in the first 10 years.
The other thing they were talking about too were with like the pedestrian bridges. So we're talking about the one that was going to be on the Catella side to
Harborside.
The Harborside to connect the new parking to the entrances. They were also talking about doing, I think it was 2 more bridges, so 3 in total, but the other 2 would be on the opposite side. So you know how there's actually a lot of people don't even realize this, but part of Downtown Disney is a bridge over a road. So they were talking about adding a couple more of that type thing in to get people over, you know, so they can still be immersed in what, you know, whether it's theme park space, Downtown Disney type space, whatever, not leaving the Disney bubble, but still being able to cross over those busy roads. So I thought that was really interesting too, especially since that's where they're kind of looking to expand the park style stuff. They haven't announced if it's a third gate or what exactly it is. Everything's just speculation as to what it is, but a lot of stuff is the far side of Downtown Disney towards and creeping into like the hotel areas there.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was interesting.
It is interesting. Really,
for new things to happen, we have to say goodbye to some old things. I'm glad I'm reading the story because I don't know if I can react to this one because this hurts. This one really hurts. Over at the Haunted Mansion, walls are up at Walls are up from Tiana's Palace all the way to Critter Country for construction of the expanded Q and Tiana's Bayou Adventure. Trees have been cut down in front of the New Orleans Square train station. And by trees, we mean multiple trees. So they've been cut down in front of the New Orleans train station between Tiana's Palace and the Haunted Mansion in that like historic kind of square area with the fountain. But this is to make way for the reimagined queue and park space that will be located in the space when construction is complete.
So it's interesting. The first thing I saw about any of this was actually on Instagram. David mm-hmm. from Fresh Baked was zooming in, yeah, and I was like, what is this business? And he's like, I was like, oh, that is a piece of a very trimmed down tree branch. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then he's done a construction video since then. Mice Chat has some really good over the wall shots.
I wouldn't say really good. I had to scroll past them. That's how much these hurt for me to see, because that area was beautiful.
It was beautiful.
Those trees were amazing. Gone.
Well, the ones that we can see that are gone are, there was one by the pet cemetery, and there's one a little bit closer, more out. It does look like from the picture that the big tree that I feel like is the biggest tree that has an actual lighting package in it for the mansion is still up.
And no, that's what that one was.
No. That's not what this one was. This one's it's this one that we can kind of see here.
No, you're on the opposites. No. No. That's not the tree you're thinking of. Okay. That tree that you're thinking of is like butted right up to Tiana's Palace in the planter. See? Like that's your train station.
Sure.
That's the other side of the whatever.
Okay.
So I don't know. My heart's breaking. You guys know how hard it was for me with the Pirates trees. This is like a whole new level. Those trees were just so cool. And I think it hurts even worse because I thought, when they were talking about the new queue, they were saying that they were going to be working to save these trees, like to not have to cut. Like, yes, some trees were going to have to go, but it doesn't look like there's any trees. And there was.
Okay, so the trees that I think are gone are like this one.
That one's gone.
And this one. And we're looking at a Google Street View kind of view outside the mansion. So all these are gone. This is the one I think I'm talking about, because up in here, there's like the light that shines over here.
I know, but
here.
Go to their pictures, because I think you can see the light like hung on one of the remaining
trunks.
Well,
the light wouldn't still be there.
No, like when they're taking it down. What's that?
That's a different light. That's facing the opposite direction.
Okay.
Not facing the mansion, unfortunately. Unfortunately,
I don't know.
I don't know either. I'm trying to.
I'm very sad about the whole thing, because I wanted to, but I just couldn't bring myself to watch any of Fresh Baked's videos and coverage on it, which I'm sure is great if you are able to see it. But it felt to me like it feels like all of the trees are gone and like only maybe like two were saved. I thought the opposite. I thought they were going to be saving way more of the trees. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's just like, hurts.
Well, these trees are that kind of, are normal trees, but there's a couple that have that kind of very unique Disneyland-ness to them that I look at, I'm like, that's a Disneyland tree. And so I'm kind of concerned about those kind of being gone, because like those are so, to me, so iconic.
That big one back left there is gone.
This?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so is this. And this. This mm-hmm. one's actually one of the stumps in there.
That one's gone. I think that was the one that you were seeing.
Because the one I'm looking for, mansions over here, is, I'm thinking it's this one. Because, see, these have that cool, like...
They're just cool. They're very neat, very cool trees. I loved the, like... Yeah, I think those trees are saved. I think the trees... Yeah. I think the trees... What my thought process is in the photos and just the feel that I'm getting, I think the trees closest to Tiana's Palace mm-hmm. are the ones that were maybe safe. I think everything around the fountain and to the mansion may be gone. Tag's holding out hope that the one closest to the entrance may still be there.
Because that one's so cool. Why
They're
would you
all so cool, well, Tag. How do you pick your favorite?
Goodness.
I knew some of them. I knew that some were going to have to go, but I just, I didn't think they all were going
to
go.
Fresh baked. Yeah, so we weren't able to find anything good in videos about this, but it is sad.
If you've been there, perhaps you can provide some clarity and let us know. Is it truly that all but maybe one tree has been cleared between where the gardens for the fountain towards the mansion were? It looks very, very... The photos that we're seeing online look very stark, so we're curious if that's what it actually looks like or if it's just an angle or what. But let us know if you visited and you've seen firsthand.
Yeah. Yeah, because everybody who has YouTube videos basically just has the same Q stuff from before and really not anything over the walls or anything updated. So once we find out, we'll report back. Well, the Year of the Dragon is upon us, and the Lunar New Year Festival has some merch for this year. Of course, there are some Lunar New Year mini ears for $34.99, a Lunar New Year spirit jersey for $79.99 if you're an adult, or a child size for $64.99. Other items include a pullover sweatshirt, t-shirt, Mickey plush, cards, and more.
I just love the colors for these. I just love
gold
the
and red.
Yes, I just love the look of the red with the pops of gold. I think it's just it's just beautiful. So I think they do a really nice job with it too, with like things like the spirit jersey, because they make sure to have like a shiny gold on the spirit jersey and just really make it look awesome. For me, of course, the ears. I love the ears. They're kind of,
no.
I want to say from what we've seen, they feel more classic to me. They don't feel very, some of the styles of ears that have come out are a little more, I don't know, over the top maybe. Whereas this is just a classic sequined, red sequined ear with a red bow with embroidered gold threads in the shape of, it looks like two dragons. So it's just classic. It's nice. I really like it. It's not super flashy and it's not super over the top. It's perfect.
I feel really dumb. Because you just said that it was two dragons, and I was like, I didn't understand that. And then when you said that, I looked, I'm like, oh yeah, those are dragons.
Clearly that is dragons. Yes.
Oh, sometimes.
For the Year of the Dragon tag.
Well, I got that, but sometimes they just have like fun designs or something. Mm-hmm. I actually like the red t-shirt that's down on your screen a little bit there. I don't know. Something about it's kind of cute.
Ooh, that is fun.
Yeah. I like Lunar New Year. I don't think I've ever shared this story before. It's only tangentially related. when I was in elementary school, my elementary school had a Lunar New Year like thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know why, but I still remember. So elementary school, okay. So mm-hmm. like up to sixth grade.
So like a million years ago for you, yeah.
They had... Well, no, I'm talking about the thing. So they had people come out like in the with the dragons and do a little thing, mm-hmm. and we had this like quad in the middle. And I still remember the kids that were in like band or whatever it is in elementary school doing this like drum thing that went with it as they like did a procession around and did all this whole thing. And so I'm like, wow, that was like late 80s for sure that this was happening. And now Disney's doing all this stuff. I don't know. It was something that popped in my head. Yeah, it was boom, 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 psh, boom, boom, and then it just went over. But for some reason, it's been years and years and years, decades, and that song is in my head, and I remember this vividly, so
that's
go
cool.
figure.
Lunar New Year is, like, quickly rising to the top of my need to get out there and experience it, because it just looks, I don't know, it just looks like a very fun, very vibrant festival every year. The food always looks amazing, the entertainment offerings look super cool. Merch is obviously just a plus, but like it just, I don't know, it just looks so fun. I can't say what it is, and I hear such good things about it too. There's quite a few people that I've seen that say this is one, like, not one of their favorites, no, this is their favorite of the festivals that go on throughout the year. So I gotta go out, I gotta experience it for myself.
Well, and who doesn't like Chinese and Japanese, like Asian, like food and stuff, and like it just looks so good. Anyway, we've also had some Weekly Cheers Go, and they had a good time with some of that stuff.
The Grand Californian goes all out for the holidays, adding some new touches for Lunar New Year. A new giant dragon kite, it's super cool, spanning 80 feet long, has been hung in the lobby. A smaller Lunar New Year display is also there with different dolls reminiscent of the dolls, and it's a small world. There's also another area for a photo op there.
This dragon, okay.
Wild.
I would never in a million years have thought, oh yeah, they're going to hang like a giant dragon in the lobby of the Grand Californian.
It's so cool.
And yet here it is. And it looks so cool. I feel like pictures and video probably don't do this justice. And I definitely think it's something you should go see in person. Because
and massive.
How cool.
Yeah. 80 feet long, this thing. I just, wow. Oh, very, very cool.
And it's a kite.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine, like, flying this out in the... That would be really cool. Well, January 29th was Ahsoka Tano Day to celebrate Ashley Eckstein, the voice of the character, along with Brett Ewan, the voice of Mickey Mouse, and a graphic artist, were on hand for the launch of the new I Am No Jedi collection the duo created together. There was a meet-and-greet event and then a lightsaber meetup in Star Wars Galaxy's Edge later that evening.
And, like... super cool lightsaber meetup that both Ashley and Brett attended, and they did all sorts of like small group photos with fans, and they did a massive, you know, everybody pile into this giant group photo. So I thought that was really fun. Like, what a fun way to kind of celebrate Ahsoka Tano Day, which I didn't, news to me, the newbie, not super deep into Star Wars stuff person, I didn't realize that we had like an unofficial holiday for Ahsoka. So I thought that was cool. So what do you think about the new merch line?
I like it. I think it's neat. There's a piece here, the I Am No Jedi oversized graphic long sleeve.
To be confused with a spirit jersey.
Right. Looks good. I like the design there. I like the color. Mm-hmm. It's got the symbols representing like the stuff on her face. Producer James was looking at this and I guess he didn't see the back because the back, it says Star Wars. But he was laughing because he's like, an orange T-shirt that says, I am no Jedi for $37. I don't understand. So, I mean, I guess I can understand that. I said, well, James, you're paying for Ashley Eckstein designing it.
And Brett.
And Brett. Yes, of course. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I think some of these things are really neat. I do think they're a little on the pricey side. But I like the designs a lot. And I like the fact that because we have people like Ashley Eckstein and Brett Ewan doing these things, that you're not getting the same kind of... I feel like sometimes some of the merch that comes out of Disney is kind of similar, like along the same vein, you know, because sure. It's the same group of people. So it's nice to see some different takes on
some things. Come on, the voice of Ahsoka.
Mm-hmm.
Combined with the voice...
cool face painting
of,
on, too.
Combined with the voice of Mickey Mouse to collab on this. I mean... how cool. How cool.
Did you see them in the photo op? Like, mm-hmm. He's got a lightsaber and mm-hmm. She's got her, like, Ahsoka.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Of course. For me, my favorite's also the same. I really like that blue long sleeve mm-hmm. T-shirt with, like, an oversized print kind of silhouette of Ahsoka's face. I really like it. Plus, ears. I really like this new version of the Ahsoka ears. I don't know what it is specifically, but I like them.
Where am I missing the ears? Oh, the ones she has on.
That she's wearing.
Yeah, those aren't bad at all. Mm-hmm. I like those.
I like them.
I will also say that Mice Chat reported that the events that happened that weekend were organized and executed better than they've seen in past years.
Yeah.
So that's always good
to
hear.
You know what? They, in according to the photos here, they're utilizing the new Downtown Disney lawn space, I guess is what we'll call it, the new green space in the newly opened area where we went and enjoyed some of the live bands, where Earl of Sandwich eventually will finally find a permanent home, and where the Parkside Market is also going to be coming. So I thought that was cool that it was, you know, that they were utilizing a new space and it was working well for the queuing system for this.
Sure.
Well, a new treat has come to Rancho Del's Zocalo. The Mickey-shaped churro cream puff is a cream puff filled with cinnamon pastry cream and topped with cinnamon cracklin and cinnamon sugar. It tastes like a churro and is pretty light even with all the cream inside, so we've heard. If this sounds tasty to you, I mean, yes, you can pick one up for
$7.99. My mouth was watering. Like, just with the description of this, and then I saw it. And I'm like, yes, please. I love, this is going to sound terrible, I love pastries and stuff that have like cream and stuff. Like, I like, I'll get donuts like, with like the cream filling. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't usually like the berry filling, but this looks so good. They did say the Disney food blog that we have linked in the show notes did say that the chocolate there's like a little chocolate decorative thing that goes on it mm-hmm. that really is just there for decoration. Yeah. It really doesn't add anything to it. But what do you think? Is this something?
I think I would try this. To me, like sometimes the cream filling is a little rich for me. So I need probably a big glass of water. I'd have to share this with someone. But yeah, for sure, I would try this.
Did this remind you? To me, it looked like one of those orbs.
Oh, kind of does.
But shaped like Mickey and cinnamon and stuff.
Kind of does.
Because I love the orbs. So the mouth, I'm thinking that the mouthfeel, as people call it, I think the mouthfeel would be very similar with this and the orbs. I really want to try one. So if you've tried one, let us know. Apparently, the Disney 100 celebration at Disneyland has concluded. All of the Disney 100 decorations in Downtown Disney have been removed. Over by the old ESPN Zone building, the retro Downtown Disney photo op has been set up. Uh-oh, what, Teresa?
I just find it funny. Apparently, the Disney 100, yes, because we're in a new year. So, of course, it
when
has concluded.
When has that ever stopped Disney from leaving things up for way too
we
long?
We are turning a new leaf here.
But did you think that for the hubbub of 100 years of the company and the Disneyland was going to be the place for it, like that we, it was just kind of like...
Yeah, womp, I feel womp. Like we covered that and it was a little... I was assuming and expecting like more with how much they had pumped it up. But
we did get World of Color 1 and Wondrous. Which
yes, I was going to say, don't forget, we got wonderful things like Wondrous. And, I mean, it wasn't designed for the Disney 100 celebration, but Magic Happens was a huge hit as well. But as far as decor, I would say decor was a little...
Well, nothing happened on the day, and like, I don't know. Yeah. I just, for something as like momentous as a company turning 100 years, I just kind of expected more. And so I'm kind of sad that it kind of just went away. So I don't know.
I did quite like the purple accents with the castle. I thought that was very pretty. I am over the moon that they did the one thing that is remaining from the Disney 100 celebration is the fountains next to the castle. I think those were such a beautiful addition and really just add to the overall magic of the castle and just the charm and like, yeah. I don't know, but I love them. It's like they're perfect. It's why were they not there before? They just feel like they should have always been there. That's how perfectly they fit in.
And Mice Chat in their article did say something that I tend to agree with. It's too bad that they didn't keep the Minnie and Mickey statues and like paint them differently and put them there.
I bet you that's not the last time that we've seen them because I don't know why, but I just have a feeling. I just have a feeling that's not the last time we've seen them. Much like the oversized Mickey statue that greeted us at D23 for the expo in 2022. And then suddenly it showing up again in Downtown Disney as a photo op. I don't think the little Mickey and Minnie statues are going to be a thing of the past. I feel like they might pop up again. The Pixar Place Hotel had its grand reopening this week. The new lobby icon of the Pixar Ball with Luxo Jr. on top looks great, along with all the other touches scattered about the hotel. Outside, a new lighting package has been installed and a new sign that gives the hotel a pop of Pixar color at night.
Okay, so there was a bunch of stuff that they've added since we were there in December, even looking at it. And I will say that the back entrance, funny enough, looks amazing because this is the back entrance that looks amazing. They did a really nice job. The colors, because they're so vivid, look great. I really like the stuff they've done outside. I thought it was weird that they had these kind of like, you know, black and white kind of lines. Well, at night, they have different colored lights shining up, so it looks like even cooler. Of course, finally, the Pixar Ball and Luxo Jr. on top of it finally was unveiled in the lobby. What do you think of this?
I think that's fun that they kind of waited for that to be the final thing for them to install right before the grand opening. It's fun. I'd love to see it in person. I can see it being a very popular photo op for those that visit. One thing that I was stupidly excited about, probably more excited about than an adult woman should have been excited about, was they announced that Bing Bong, and he was there. Bing Bong is meeting and greeting at the Pixar Place Hotel. Mm-hmm. And he made his debut at the grand opening And I was so excited. Remember how excited we were for just the little Bing Bong figurine in Bing Bongs on the
pier? I didn't realize you were such a Bing Bong
person. I love him. He's just so sweet.
They also have Joe Gardner from Soul was playing.
Yes.
We saw the piano there when we were there. We didn't know at the time there would be that.
Social media was blowing up because Disney did a really nice little, like a little video or a little reel showing the gentleman playing. And I mean, yeah, he had like Joe Gardner's hat, the briefcase.
Glasses.
He did a really nice job. He was playing the, I don't know, the song that Joe played at one point in the movie that kind of like put him into like, what did they call it? Like the zone. Yep. So he was kind of playing that it was just awesome. Super awesome. Just fun little touches like that. That's not something that Disney needed to do. They did not need to have Bing Bong and Joe Gardner there. They did because, I mean, come on, how cool.
The pool area looks really nice. It looks like they have a lot of like shaded outdoor seating around the pool area, which looks really nice again with those pops of color. I just can't get over how just these like primary colors do so much for the space of just like popping. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, all the wall art has finally been installed in the lobby. There was a couple of these areas when we were there that were kind of behind stuff. And now we see why, because they had some more vivid things.
Yeah.
So it's nice. It's nice.
Well, it's that time again for our friend Eric over at Concierge to catch us up on other Disney news.
Hello, everyone. This is Eric Johnson with Concierge, and welcome to the D180. While Teg and Teresa cover all things Disneyland, in the D180, we take a spin around the rest of the Disney universe, and we do it in 180 seconds. Let's jump right in. We start this week in Walt Disney World, where we are less than half a year away from seeing a big refresh to one of the resort's oldest properties. Disney's Fort Wilderness Resort and Campground has been around since almost day one. Tall tales tell that the project crew in Orlando kind of forgot to build the property while they were working on so much else. They finished it a bit more than a month after they did the rest of Walt Disney World, and the rustic campgrounds opened on November 19, 1971. It's hard to imagine to some Disney World guests, but Fort Wilderness, not to be confused with the nearby Wilderness Lodge, is largely an RV park that even allows tent camping on property. Travelers have come to this resort for generations to enjoy a mix of theme park excellence and a quiet retreat into the forest. The price point out at Fort Wilderness and all of its extra outdoor activities means a lot of folks hang out for several non-theme park days as well. If you want a somewhat more permanent structure to stay in, the cabins at Fort Wilderness are a great option. These standalone homes have a master suite, bunk beds, and pullouts to accommodate up to 6 guests at once. There's a small kitchen with a cooktop, fridge, toaster, and microwave. I personally love sitting out on the large porch as the sun sets. But okay, I've buried the lead here. The big news is that on July 1st, new cabins open up at the resort. These new and refurbished cabins might be a bit glampier than the previous generation, but they look like they will still have plenty of backwoodsy charm. New dining options coming to the resort ensure that Disney isn't forgetting about this super fun resort option. And hey, if you're into the DVC scene, you can even purchase some shares of these new cabins. Anywhere you stay at the Fort Wilderness Resort and Campgrounds is a win. Close to the Magic Kingdom, tons of fun activities day and night, and the world-renowned Hoop-Dee-Doo Review Dinner Show. Ask about this place next time you are thinking of a trip. We'll take a quick monorail ride south to Epcot, where prep is already underway to transition from the Festival of the Arts to the Epcot International Flower and Garden Festival. Disney's horticulturists are preparing their crew of topiary characters. These number over 70 this year, including new characters from Coco, Wish, and everybody's favorite Flora Colossus himself, Groot. The Garden Rock series of daily concerts returns as it does every year. Disney promises some new acts to join the stable of frequent performers. We will definitely see returning favorites in the food kiosks and some new surprises this year. Activities for adults, kids, sophisticated adulty kids, and adults who are kids at heart will abound. If you've never seen the International Flower and Garden Festival, you have to give it a try. I'm really looking forward to my visit this year during the Run Disney Springtime Surprise Weekend. I'm even bringing some Epcot newbies, which will be a complete blast. The festival runs from February 28th through May 27th, so there's still plenty of time to throw together a trip. Especially considering this is a leap year, you get an extra day. Get in touch with your favorite concierge right away. I hope you enjoyed our quick spin around the rest of the Disney universe. If you'd like to learn more about these Disney adventures or just have a few questions, please come on over. Visit the social media and websites of both DL Weekly and us, their official travel planners, concierges. We look forward to planning something special for you and yours. I'm Eric Johnson, and this has been your D180.
Thanks, Eric.
Yoo-hoo! Hello, everybody! It's me, Heimlich! Mein stomach is so empty! Hey, help me to go find something to eat! Come on, everybody, here we go!
Well, this week in Snack Chat, we've got a couple different stories to talk about. The first one is February being Black History Month, which can only mean one thing. The Celebrate Soulfully celebration is back at Disneyland. The Disney Parks blog released a foodie guide for the event. Now, I will say,
Tag cheated.
I told Teresa about this earlier. One of the problems is I actually don't really like anything that they have on the foodie guide for Disneyland.
Tag cheated.
I did not cheat. Teresa told me, oh, you're going to bring back Mouse Kingdoms, the other podcast I used to do about all the other parks, because I have stuff from Disneyland. So let me just to get it out of the way. At Disney World, I really like the mini red velvet cake, which is a red velvet cake with cream cheese buttercream. It just looks really good. At the Magic Kingdom, there's an Anti-Gravity's Galactic Goodies, which are at Anti-Gravity's Galactic Goodies from February 1st to the 29th. They have a Bananas Foster's Shake, which has a banana milkshake layered with caramelized banana sauce on top of whipped cream. At the Main Street Bakery, they have Tiana's Petite Cake, which is a vanilla chiffon cake, lemon chantilly. I don't really like lemon, but it's there. And fresh strawberries topped with fondant flour and Tiana chocolate piece. And then finally, at Hollywood Studios, I had Woody's Lunchbox, or at Woody's Lunchbox, they have a sweet potato lunchbox tart with cinnamon brown sugar icing, toasted marshmallows, and pecans. The reason I picked this one is it looks like a hand pie that has those flavors, and I am here for it.
So back to the West Coast.
Sorry, there wasn't anything that I was excited about.
So back to the West Coast in Disneyland Park over at Troubadour Tavern. They're going to have a fried chicken bowl. They did have this before, but it includes spicy honey glazed fried chicken served with four cheese mac and cheese, smoked turkey, collard greens, and sweet potato cornbread. But new this year, they have a sweet potato pie casserole, which is a sweet potato pecan pie. Mini size, like miniature handheld pie size. Super fun. Riverbell Terrace is going to have a brunch platter, which includes pancakes, scrambled eggs, biscuits and gravy, and house slaw, as well as a dinner platter that has barbecue brisket, fried chicken, buttery mashed potatoes, and biscuit gravy. Holy cow. That sounds like it could be shareable. That sounds like a lot of food.
That does sound like a lot.
Yum. And then Cafe Orleans has a prefix meal with a choice of appetizer, deviled eggs, and pickled vegetables, gumbo, or Caesar salad with cornmeal, fried fish, and turtle cheesecake.
So at Disney California Adventure at Lamplight Lounge, it's currently available. They have a Brown Estate Chaos Theory red wine blend. And then at the lobby lounge at the Disneyland Hotel, they have a shrimp and grits available from February 1st to the 29th. They have a sweet potato fries poutine, which is sweet potato fries, gravy, and cheese curds. By the way, poutine sounds really weird, but it's delicious. So if you've never had it, maybe try it. They have a barrel-aged smoked Uncle Nearest 1884 bourbon and a whole bunch of other stuff I can't pronounce. It sounds interesting, and a couple other alcoholic beverages.
And then finally at the Grand Californian Hotel, you at the bar Hearthstone Lounge and Storytellers Cafe, you are able to get a couple of specialty drinks. One is the Golden Soul, which is Uncle Nearest 1884, ginger liqueur, cream de cassis, lime juice, and raspberries, as well as a separate drink, Crown and Hops 8 Trill Pills. So I think it's so fun. I don't know why, but the thing that I found most exciting about this menu was that the lobby lounge at the Disneyland Hotel was included in the specialty menu, and they have specialty items to celebrate soulfully. I thought this is the first time I can think of that space has gotten to feature specialty menu items. So I thought that was so cool because it's a newer space, and it's kind of not, we haven't actually like checked it out to dine there. We've gone past it, and it looks fun because it just looks relaxing. It's kind of in a quiet corner of the Disneyland Hotel. So, yeah, I don't know why, but that was for some reason, that was extra exciting to me. Did you know that January is National Soup Month?
I did not.
Well, how about that February 4th is National Homemade Soup Day.
I also did not know that.
Well, the Disney Parks blog was thinking ahead to let you know, and they posted 7 soup recipes that you can make at home from the parks, hotels, and the cruise lines. And yum. They all sound, there's several of these that I want to try making. They all sound delicious.
The loaded baked potato soup from Carnation Cafe sounds really good.
A creamy corn soup sounds good. That's from the Grand Californian. But things that are from Disneyland, like Tag mentioned, there's a loaded baked potato soup. There's also a cheesy enchilada soup that was served at Fiddler, Pfeiffer, and Practical Cafe in DCA.
It looks pretty good, too.
And then I'm not sure where this was served, but from the vault, from the we're aware of the Disney movie vault. Apparently, there's also a Disney recipe vault. There is a beef and barley soup that they pulled from the vault for that as well.
Okay, hold on 1 second. I just want to make sure that this does not have mushrooms in it, because I feel like
I want to make it. I want to try that.
This
so
looks
bad.
Really good. The Impossible Sausage and Kale Soup from Epcot. It looks so hearty and good. It's a recipe with plant-based sausage that's added to potatoes, kale, and dairy-free cooking cream. And then you can use your favorite plant-based store-bought or homemade pesto to top the soup. Gosh, that's a lot of ingredients. So,
like,
you look at the list.
It's like, whoo! Yeah. But, it looks delicious, though.
I mean,
so good.
You know, we could have used these a couple weeks ago when, like, the whole country was in that cold snap. People could have warmed up with these. You know, we always talk about food. People always talk about how they're hungry, listening to us talk about snack chat and all that other stuff. But Disney's providing some recipes, so if you want to get some and do some of that at home, you certainly can. Well, if you enjoy listening to the show, please consider rating and reviewing the show on your podcast app. It helps other Disney fans become weekly tiers and part of the community.
Pilots, we've detected some producer questions near Jakku. Report to your DL weekly vessels and make the jump to hyperspace. The 77 Squadron will provide support during your trivia mission. Good luck, and may the Force be with you.
Welcome to Trivia Land. How are we feeling tonight? You ready for great listener submitted questions? You got great knowledge in your heads? You ready to go?
I'm saying yes, because that's probably foolish. But last week was a very pleasant stop at Trivia Land, so I'm hoping for another nice visit.
Oh, you mean James took it easy on you?
I don't know. I don't know how to feel, to be honest. So I'm gonna let the trivia wins take me.
All right. Well, let's see how it goes. Your first listener submitted question from listener Todd B. In Toontown during the holidays, you will find the third little piggy bank also shows some of the currency of Toontown. Who is featured on the $1 bill?
Oh, man. I'm going to say Roger Rabbit. Maybe it's Mickey.
$1 bill. So I'm thinking that it's probably along the lines like our currency, where like George Washington's on the dollar bill, right? So I'm going to say Mickey Mouse.
All right. So we've got Roger Rabbit and Mickey Mouse. Final answers.
Yes.
All righty. Your second listener submitted question from listener Matt M. Pinocchio's Loden has a mural. It has one signpost with arrows pointing in 3 directions. What does each arrow point to?
This is funny. I feel like this goes along with, what was it, Peter? No, yeah. Mr. Toad.
Mr. Toad's Wild Ride.
Yeah.
I want to say...
Nowhere in particular was Mr. Toad.
Yep. I want to say that it points to the 3 areas that the film takes place. So what is, like, the village, Pleasure Island...
Is there a name?
...and the sea.
Sea... Pleasure Island.
And I'm going to call it the village.
And the village.
I don't know if the village has a name or not.
I'll go with you because I have nothing better to say.
Okay, so you're saying the village, Pleasure Island, and the sea. Final answers.
Yeah.
All right.
Matt M., I wonder if that's Matt Mason, the author or the poet.
Actually, it does say Nebraska State Poet.
It is.
Nebraska State Poet.
Yes.
You know, we thought he was our friend, and then he sends us in trivia like
that
this.
I think that's a good one.
I'm just kidding, Matt.
All right, your third listener-submitted question from listener Donna S. Who is credited with designing the original Disneyland logo?
The original?
Oh. That's a good question.
And this one was a hard one for me to find info on, so I will give you a small hint. We're going to the original Gothic style black and white Walt Disney's Disneyland.
Oh.
Mm. I'm going to say only because, you know, they had that graphic that was to sell to the bankers. Was that Herb Ryman?
Yeah.
I'm going to say Herb Ryman.
That's my only thought, too, but I don't feel like that's it, but that's the only thing I've got as well, so I'll also go with Herb Ryman.
Oh, for once you're hitching your wagon to my horses.
All right, Herb Ryman, final answer.
Yeah.
All righty. And your fourth and final regular round question from listener Michael R. We all know in Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, Mr. Toad goes to court and is found guilty.
Yes.
But Mr. Toad apparently didn't have an attorney. In Disney California Adventure, there is reference to a law firm or counselors at law. What is the name of the firm? Where is the reference located? And what is the significance of those names?
Oh. I don't know all of it, but I know part of it. It's on, what is the road when you come in? Buena Vista Street. It's on Buena Vista Street.
Oh.
It's a window on Buena Vista Street.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say it's like the side that the trolley treats is on.
Okay.
But I don't know.
You don't know anything else? You just know it's somewhere there?
I feel like it's Katz, K-A-T-Z, but I don't remember what the other names are.
Well, there's Julius Katz and Sons, which is
you're right. That's not the same thing.
Which is the apparel place.
Yeah, you're right. Not the same thing. But I think it's on that side, and I can't remember what the names are. One of us, the street's where I think it is, though.
For some reason, Buena Vista Street makes the most sense. Because the other thought that I had was that San Francisco Street or whatever that's between like Little Mermaid and the Grizzly River Run, like that little strip, because there's some windows there. But I feel like that's very San Francisco themed, and I can't imagine that Mr. Toad has anything to do with San Francisco.
Does this have to do with Toad, or was that just a...
It was just referencing that Toad didn't have a lawyer.
Yeah, it was just I was going to say, I don't think it came back to Toad.
Well, I think you're probably right with Buena Vista Street, but I have no idea anything else. Can you read the question one more time? What three sections?
The window.
What sections are we looking for?
There is a reference to a law firm or counselors at law. What is the name of the firm? Where is the reference located? And what is the significance of the names in the name of the firm?
Gosh darn it. I still think it's on Buena Vista Street, but I think it's on a door and it might be on the left side. I need to stop thinking.
Well,
I know I've seen it and it's like right by the bridge, like the monorail bridge, like in that.
So is it like I feel like maybe, because it's around that same time frame of like Cars Land. I wonder if the three names are like the three main people from like Pixar. Would be the significance. I don't know. I don't think we can think about it too long.
Nope.
So Buena Vista Street.
That's all we've got.
I'm gonna say the significance is that it's like maybe people from Pixar, but I don't know any of the names. Final answer.
All right.
Lassiter.
Well, yes, but
and your bonus question for tonight from listener Tim M. He would love to hear you sing Grim Grinning Ghosts.
What?
And he provided all of the lyrics.
Oh, he wants us to sing it.
Yes.
What?
When the crypt doors creak and the tombstones quake,
swoops them out for a swinging wake.
Happy haunts materialize and begin to socialize. Grim grinning ghosts come out to socialize. That was without reading, folks. That's all he gets.
There's more.
Yeah, that's all he gets.
He provided all of it.
That's all he gets.
All right.
I think off the top of our head, that was pretty dang good.
That was very good.
Oh, Teresa's going. Or a silly spook may sit by your side. Shrouded in a daft disguise, they begin to terrorize. Grim grinning ghosts come out to socialize. When you hear the knell of Requiem Bell,
spirits swell.
Something like that.
Reckless bones.
That's where I start losing it.
Well done. Well, listeners, how do you think they did?
I think we get bonus points for that.
How did you do singing along at home?
We did. We get like extra bonus points for not giving, even having the words.
Yeah.
By memory.
So it'll stick around until after the discussion topic, and we're all going to find out together.
You know, there was a period of time that I could recite the entire Ghost Host narration from beginning to end. Because I remember, like, proving it to somebody one time. So now watch, that'll be a future question. So.
You threw it out there, so.
Probably. Tim M's going to message back in and be like, do it.
For this week's discussion topic, Tegan and I actually got to take a little mini Disney trip this past weekend. We drove down to Chicago to check out the Disney 100 exhibit that they have on display. So this is a exhibit from the Walt Disney Archives. It started in Philadelphia, then came to Chicago. Next, it's going to Kansas City, but it's traveling for 5 years, we learned. And there's two versions of this exhibit. One is traveling around the U.S. The other one is actually traveling around Europe. So this may sound familiar because Tag actually got to go to the Europe version of this.
It was in
display.
Munich, Germany last year. Yep.
So he got to go do that when he spent the summer in Europe last year.
Spoiler alert, totally worth going to the one in the U.S. as well, because there was enough things different, makes it worth it.
Yeah, so the thing I have to talk about, this is stupid, and it might just be specific to the Chicago exhibit. It's located at the Hub. I want to say it goes through the end of February, maybe into March. So if you're in the area, check out, we'll have the link in the show notes online so you can check it out and you can get your tickets so you can go. But the thing that I thought was so cool was the place that this was. It wasn't like it was inside of another museum. It wasn't like an exhibition hall inside of a bigger museum. It was its own separate thing. So as we're driving up, the entire building is painted with Disney 100 stuff. There's Sorcerer Mickey on the side. The Disney 100 logo is on the other side. They have the Disney 100 like logo as far as like the text is painted there. The Disney 100, the other Disney 100 logo is kind of like the, I don't know, it's these like colors and silhouettes of characters kind of shooting out from it. But how cool is that? They painted the whole building just for this exhibit.
It looked really cool. Just to follow up, real time follow up for you, March 17th is the last day that this is in Chicago.
So you've got a month and a half to visit the Chicago.
Now, I just want to say at the very beginning, this was so different than the one I saw in Munich. So the one in Munich, when you first get in, you get your ticket and you start to experience the exhibit. There's a smallerish room where you get to see the like holographic Walt and Mickey kind of thing. And you went right into that and then you went right into the other thing. In the one in Chicago, it was a long room that you went into, and on both sides of you were like projected surfaces. And so they had... And actually, even before that room, there was another waiting room with a pre-show with Becky Klein talking about what you're going to see. And then you go into this room. And then there's a little pre-show before Mickey and Walt come out that projects some stuff onto the side. So I was like, wow, this is so different than what I saw in Germany. So if you do see the international version and want to see a different version, definitely the U.S. version is different.
It is different. So after... So we're just going to kind of walk through the exhibit with you, per se, and just kind of talk about some of the what the different rooms were and some of the things that we saw in the rooms that stood out. Because there was, I mean, a ton of really amazing, really cool things. Of course, yes, there were things in the exhibit that we had seen on display at other archives put together exhibits, but still so many things that I had never seen before. So many things that literally we were driving halfway home and I kind of looked at Tag and I said, do you realize that we were like inches away from this like super amazing historic thing and it was the original and all this stuff? Because it's just like amazing. So anyways, so the first room was kind of the beginnings, right? So where did it all begin? So it was talking about the beginning of like Laugh-O-Gram films. There was an original sketch from Steamboat Willie. Original, you guys, original Steamboat Willie sketch. There were also some original Oswald the Lucky Rabbit storyboard sketches. There were other other things that were reproduction of sketches from, you know, of the original Mickey Mouse, because the actual original Mickey Mouse sketch is on display at the Walt Disney Family Museum. So they just had a reproduction on display here, but you could see it. And it also talked a little bit about Walt and his like family tree. But the coolest thing to me was like literally I was standing against a wall. To my left was an original Oswald the Lucky Rabbit sketch. And to my right was an original sketch from Steamboat Willie. Hmm. And in between the two was a telegram from, I think it was from Roy. Now I don't remember if it was Roy to Walt or Walt to Roy. But then in between the two was a telegram between the two brothers. And I was just like, pinch me moment. When did you ever think that you were ever going to be standing and seeing original sketches from these iconic historic things?
I mean, it's super cool. We got to see a zoetrope. Right?
Oh,
Stills
yeah,
of the Zoetrope.
Yeah.
So it was the actual one that like Walt used. They had a video clip there of him actually like showing it in a film, and it was just sitting right there. I mean, it was, you know, obviously protected and stuff, but it was cool that you could see that it was totally like original. And so we took some videos. By the way, for supporters of ours, there will be a video coming out sometime in February that is going to be a compilation of a bunch of visuals mm-hmm. and us kind of narrating the different rooms. So be on the lookout for that. If you're a supporter, that's going to go up on our Patreon. There will be a video kind of showing you visually this whole
yeah,
experience. So we're going to talk about it right now, but if you want to see it and you want to see us experiencing it, that'll be in a special
yeah, we
video.
Kinda, we decided we were going to try something different this year, a little on topic, off topic. But instead of, so for supporters at the $5 level, you get a $5 level and above, you get a bonus episode each month. Well, we thought it'd be fun to try something different and do little videos and kind of take you along on some of these experiences with us, because you get to hear our lovely voices every week. So we thought it'd be fun and a little more special if we might do these videos. So if you're a supporter, let us know what you think about these videos. If you'd like to see more of them, if you want us to go back to just the regular bonus episodes that we were doing before. But we just thought this would be something fun, especially with how awesome and visual this thing is.
Well, there's so many unique things.
Just so many cool things.
Maybe it'll encourage you to go see it.
So after that room, we kind of went into like the beginnings, I guess would be a good way of saying it. The beginnings of the Walt Disney Company. We were looking at different things. Well, it started, of course.
You forgot the one of the most important things, Teresa. I did. What was a free part of the experience that you were very excited about?
They had, I mean, that was kind of along the whole way, but they had basically like a little scavenger hunt.
We
it was like a little trivia scavenger hunt.
We walked up to the front counter, and it dawned on me that we did this in Munich. And I said, Teresa, do you want to, why am I asking? Of course you're going to want to do this. Here's a scavenger hunt. And she was like, ooh.
The people there didn't even ask, because it's definitely geared towards
kids,
younger fans. But I tell you, this kid at heart had a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah. All right. Sorry. Back on track.
So the next room was like I said, it was talking about like the full length features. And so we started with Snow White. There was an area devoted to Snow White, an area devoted to Pinocchio, an area devoted to Cinderella, as well as we'll get to some of the other ones. But those were kind of the first three. Again, I was just losing my mind because they had original story sketches of these films. And these are things that you've never seen before. So it showed what they kind of imagined it was kind of like their concept art in a way, but they're all hand-drawn sketches, concept art of what the dwarfs might look like, what Snow White might look like. There was one sketch that was an unrecognizable Snow White, an unrecognizable Evil Queen, an unrecognizable dwarf. And then they also had like a figure that wasn't fully like sketched out, but they were saying, this is the prince. And what it was they were comparing what the height differences of these characters should and would be. Again, these are far from what the characters ended up looking like at the end. So it was really interesting to kind of get a peek at that process of them creating this, and just how different things are when they first start versus, you know, evolving into then the beloved characters we see.
Of course, you'd think for these animated films that they would just be things like Teresa's talking about, like sketches and paintings and, you know, just kind of, you know, things to compare things. However, there were some really cool things in there because back in the early days, one of the ways that they tried to make their animation look as realistic as possible is they actually used real life things and they would film it and they would have their animators watch. I'm sure everybody who's been into Disney for any amount of time has seen the videos of like Snow White. There's a actress dressed in Snow White, like dancing around, and they were sketching like how the dress moved and stuff. Well, for this exhibit, they actually had, and I didn't even know this was a thing, they actually had a actual wooden puppet that they used to get the idea of how the puppet would move for Pinocchio. And then also they had an outfit there that somebody wore that was Pinocchio's like outfit that like somebody wore for them to kind of do like a screen test or whatever with, that allowed them to make sure that it was accurate. And I just thought that that was so cool that they had, because again, you think with animation, you think, oh, well, people saw like a photo of something or they just did it from their head. But no, they actually filmed real life things to make sure that they were accurate to how it moved in real life.
Yeah. Next, this was my like pinch me moment, and I remember just kind of standing there. Tag had already like moved on, was like halfway around the exhibit, and I was just still stuck in this one part because never did I in a million years think that I would be able to see these things up close, let alone in a public setting, just ever. But
I don't even know what you're talking about, so I'm like, what are you talking
you're
about?
You're like, what were you so stuck on? So The next area was Cinderella, and Cinderella themed. And I stood there in like on disbelief. There was an original Mark Davis sketch of Sleeping Beauty of Aurora. Oh, sorry, I missed Aurora. There was an original sketch from Sleeping Beauty of Aurora. Again, not quite the same. What, you know, kind of more of a concept sketch. It was not what she ended up looking like on the screen, but. Never, Mark Davis, come on. This is a man that we know and love from the parks who started in the animation field and department and was kind of pulled over. So he was very instrumental and was a big deal for both of those things. So to me, that was just like, wow. And then right next to that, right under that, was a Cinderella sketch, again, original, by Mary Blair. And I was just like dumbfounded that I was standing in front of these two original drawings, sketches, paintings, whatever, by these two incredible people that we talk. I feel like we talk about them all the time. I read about them all the time. So it was just like a pinch me moment for me. That was probably my biggest, like, let me just pick my jaw up off the floor. Holy cow, what am I looking at? Never, that was what I told Tag. Never in a million years did I think I'd be like this close, like could get an inch away from those original things.
That room was called Where Do the Stories Come From? Yes. And I kind of talked about how all that went through. So yeah, it was a cool room. They had stuff from more of the recent like live action movies. They had, of course, the carousel horse from Mary Poppins there. They had the prop globe. Of the snow globe, which had a cool graphical effect kind of going on with it. They had some stuff from Christopher Robin.
Yep, there was a Winnie the Pooh prop.
Mm-hmm. There was Cogsworth and Lumiere from the live action Beauty the Beast. Mm-hmm. So lots of cool stuff.
Oh, Cinderella's glass. So that was the other thing too, is they had the store, like the opening credits storybooks from like Cinderella from Snow White. Those were on display. They also had Cinderella's live action version Cinderella glass slipper with the butterfly on the toe. So they had, yeah, it was cool. They kind of tied some of the live action things in with the original animated things.
The next room had some information on like how they, the illusion of life, like how they bring things together. And this was kind of a smaller room, but the most amazing part was one whole wall of this was all of these like little maquettes of these various characters. There was things like maquettes of Jiminy Cricket. There was
The genie.
One of the ones that I was most surprised about was Judge Doom from Roger Rabbit was actually in there as a maquette. And then of course, Elliot and Donald and some other characters. I mean, there's just a lot of characters in here, and it was so neat to see these different things. And then, of course, Teresa, I think, is going to hopefully talk about the animation also from Mark Davis.
I died. Yes, I died again because in this room, they also had another wall, actually, was mm-hmm. devoted to 101 Dalmatians. So not just the animated version, but also the two live action versions that have come out since then that are centered around, of course, Cruella de Vil. We have the most recent one with Emma Stone, Cruella. And then there's a live action 101 Dalmatians that had featured Glenn Close as Cruella. They had some of those props too. But again, the thing that I had to pick my jaw up off the wall, there were original sketches of what Cruella may look like from Mark Davis. And it was really cool because it was all these, they were kind of smaller sketches, but they were pasted in this one frame. And so there was, let me look. How many were there? These drawings were from 1961. I want to say there was like eight different drawings of what Cruella may look like. There were things that each of them had, like, apparently he was very, like, the Cruella de Vil coat, the fur coat that she wears, that seems to be something that came up early and that they knew that they wanted to keep because that coat appeared in multiple versions of what Cruella may look like. Same thing with the two-colored hair, the black side and the white side of her hair coloring. That was also the same. But a lot of it was just, you know, just differences. Anyways, amazing.
I just love, because I remember seeing on one of the Disney things about Cruella and Mark Davis kind of trying to come up with this character, was just like the hard lines of her like face and stuff and how like crazy she looked, but very, very cool.
So yeah, wow. So not only was there the concept drawings of what Cruella may or may not look like, but there are actual cells. They were reproductions of the original, but actual cells of current or what Cruella ended up looking like with, like Tag said, kind of her hard facial features. And it's a scene where she's driving the car and she's like very crazed. So it was kind of a fun one to see up close. But yeah,
they also had an animation cell from Peter Pan, which was super cool to see. Well, because the next room ended up being the, I guess that was the next room.
There was also this too. I took a video of another story sketch. This just was from a studio artist, but it was a grease pencil and marker on paper. And it's of, again, Cruella in her crazed state, chasing after the puppies that are kind of hanging out of the back of the moving van. It was just really cool looking at that sketch up close to see how they depicted the movement of that scene. Because obviously it was a sketch on paper. It wasn't moving. It was not animated in any way, but the details and the different things that they did made it feel like it was moving, even though it was still, which was very cool to see.
So the next room we went into was the Spirit of Adventure room. And this room was interesting because there was kind of a lot of stuff from a lot of things that you wouldn't necessarily like put together. So you walk in and there's a whole big section of the Jungle Cruise, which obviously they talked about the Jungle Cruise attraction, but also a little bit about the movie. And one of the neatest things that they had here was a model that was used by Walt Disney of one of the Jungle Cruise boats, which I thought was cool. They had a section, like a Moana section. They had a Star Wars section. They had a Marvel section.
Yeah, and then there was also Peter Pan. They had a section for Peter Pan and also Pirates of the Caribbean.
That's right.
Yep. As well as 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. So, again, a lot of things that you wouldn't necessarily it made total sense that they were put together in this room for this display, but it's not some things that I would have necessarily thought to put together on my own. I agree, though. For me, the biggest, like, shock or like surprise thing that we saw in that room was the model of the Jungle Cruise attraction boat that Walt Disney used. That was so cool. And it was sitting there right next to Emily Blunt's outfit from the live action Jungle Cruise movie. So yeah, it was just wild. I will say this teaser for those of you that will be able to see the video, they did have a Porygon display.
I was wondering if you were going to like leave that for the...
No, yeah, they did have a Porygon display. I'll leave it to you so you can watch my thoughts on the Porg. But there was a Porg.
She had thoughts.
There was a Porg. BB-8 was there. We also saw a lightsaber hilt. I want to say it was Rey's. The Skywalker lightsaber hilt that Rey had.
Sometimes you look at things up close and you think like... you look at them in the movie and they look perfect. And then you look at them up close when you can get near them and they end up being very surprising. So I was looking at the Stormtrooper outfit and I laughed. I made Teresa come over and look because the boots, this is from the sequel trilogy. It was a First Order Trooper. The shoes on this are like Vans shoes that they have painted white and then use like a black marker to do the edging. It was just funny to me that these are just normal old shoes that they painted. You'll see it in the video. I'm going to probably put it in there. But then just like the outfits, I don't know. It was just, there was a section you could see under the plate that you could see Velcro was holding together. I don't know. It's amazing how these things don't show up in the movie, which makes when they have these costumes in the parks that much more impressive.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. The next section or the next room was devoted like to sounds and to music specifically. This was neat because this was a very one of the more interactive exhibits, I'd say. There were things on display that you could see, but then there was a lot of things that was more, you know, right? It's more audio, so you'd be listening to it. They did have the what Tag was super excited about from the exhibit that you saw in, where did you see it again? In Germany. In Munich, where they would have a song, a Disney song, so like How Far I'll Go from Moana, and you could listen to it. And what they did was they took all of the different voice actresses that sung this song in all different languages, and they kind of did a mashup. So you'd have...
It was seamless.
Yeah, though. A seamless mashup. So you'd have, you know, this line in this language followed by that line in that language, and just on and on and on. I lost count as to how many different languages... they had it was amazing because if you didn't know, if you were just listening to the you would almost think it was the same person singing the song all the way through. That was just incredible to me because we had umpteen different people singing umpteen different versions, but they all sounded very similar and they all sounded like, you know, what everyone knows and feels Moana sounds like. That was incredible. Same thing they had that for Let It Go. Multiple sections. Very, very cool.
Now, I just want to give you an idea. So I'm not going to play the audio for you, but I'm just going to tell you as the, like, this is the Moana section. I'm just going to tell you, like, how often this changes. So I started recording it. It was being sung in Tahitian, and then it changed to Russian, and then it took a second, and it changed to French, and then it changed to... French went on a while. Latin, Spanish. So again, just it's like one sentence at a time, and each sentence was going on to a different thing. And I just, like Teresa said, the voice talent in the different in the different languages all sounded fairly similar. It was weird.
Incredible. It was really, really cool to watch and to kind of just see, right? Because you're used to just listening, but also just watching the language, like it flip from language to language to language. Just amazing. The other thing that I really, really thought was super cool in this section was they had an area devoted to sound effects, we'll call it. So all the different things that make up these things that we hear in films, in animated films, that we then associate with different things. So there was some of the items were actually on display. Some of the items that they used weren't on display, but they had photos of the items. But at each station, there was a little video that you could watch that explained what the item was, what sound it replicates or was used for, and then them showing the process of them making that sound to then coincide with the film for whatever it was. So one of the things we were looking at was like how to make, it was like an old leather wallet that they were using for the Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs when the dwarfs are like
the footsteps
sneaking into the, like trying to tiptoe into the cabin. It's like squirt, or the cottage, and it's like squirt, squirt, squeak. That was really fun to watch. There was a bottle.
This bottle's awesome. So it says glass bottle, sound effect device for pickaxes in the dwarfs' mine. And what's interesting is it's just a bottle, and then it says to fill it to the capacity, and there's like a line that they fill it to.
This line. Just amazing. There was a wind chime that was on display. That this wind chime is Tinkerbell. So the sound that you associate with Tinkerbell's kind of like, I don't know, sassy and it, like her Tinkerbell's voice, I guess would be a good way of saying mm-hmm. it. And just her kind of like flying around.
Her little sparkly sound.
Yeah. That was a wind chime. And so we got to see, and it looks like, this doesn't look like they just found a wind chime and said, oh yeah, that'll, no, this looks like they made this wind yeah. chime specifically for this. It was.
Now, one thing that's really incredible. Cool about this was definitely one of those artifacts that I wanted to point out, that when I saw it in Munich, there was a lot of artifacts that were duplicated at the Chicago version. However, the version in Chicago had the like originals, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. where a lot of the stuff I saw in Munich were reproductions.
Yeah.
They had this chime for Tinkerbell, but on the placard it said reproduction. Yeah. This one, original.
Was, yeah. The other cool thing we got to see too was a whistle sound effect device used for Steamboat Willie.
Mm-hmm.
That was also the original. But yeah, there was this thing that, have you seen the movie The Rescuers?
No.
Well, there is this adorable bug. He's a dragonfly. His name is Evenrood. And they showed how they made the sound effects for him, like buzzing around. So that, I can't do it. This is not my day job. Don't, I'm sorry. But it was the craziest looking device. And it's the sound that was used for like flies buzzing.
Oh, yeah.
Just amazing. Mm-hmm. I don't know how people figure, like, how do you figure that out?
Yeah. So the sound section was very cool, very interactive. The next room we moved into was kind of about, like, all the nature. We have more.
There's one more cool thing I need to talk about before we move on.
Sure.
There was original handwritten music for some very famous park songs that we all know and love. We got to see an original thing for Yo-Ho, otherwise known as A Pirate's Life for Me. I thought that, again, super, super cool.
The next room was all about, like, nature, basically, and it was called The World Around Us. And this had something that I had walked by, and Teresa was like, no, you need to pay attention to this.
I said, oh, no, go back.
There is first of all, there was a great painting, all these paintings of different park settings. So they had a painting of the Matterhorn, they had a painting of Frontierland for Disneyland Paris. It was beautifully done, and also a painting of Cars Land. But there was a display showing Walt.
It said Walt. Yeah, Walt in South America. So we've talked about this trip because Walt went with other Imagineers to do some research, Mary Blair included.
Gaucho pants is the word I was looking for.
Yes. So there was a pair of pants on display that Walt wore. There were also a couple of photos of Walt wearing said gaucho pants on his trip. But then they also had some sketches, another Mary Blair sketch. And then there was a camera that was used that, again, something that if you weren't really looking at this display, you'd totally miss this. But the camera was a 16mm camera used by Walt Disney.
During the studio research and Goodwill tour in South America, footage shot from this camera was featured in Saludos Amigos.
Yes. I just like, come on.
By the way, incredible. Can we just talk about the camera for a second? Look at the like craftsmanship of this. Like, this beautiful side thing isn't even part of the function, but like, we don't make anything like that anymore. That's beautiful. Amazing. There was also a scrapbook given to Walt during studio research and Goodwill tour in South America that looked really cool. Again, another one of those things that they don't make things like that anymore.
Mm-mm. Incredible.
All right.
The next section, of course, we were going to be... The next two sections were like, for us park fans. The first one that we're going to talk about was talking about, like, innovations. So they had a ton of, like, animatronics mm-hmm. and that sort of thing in there. We got to see the original, the little bird cage, the automation bird in cage that sat in the offices of Walt Disney. So this is believed to be what kind of inspired Walt to do the Tiki Room and mm-hmm. do audio animatronics. So this was an animatronic type thing. And so this was kind of what sparked the idea of audio animatronics. So that was neat.
They had a control panel there, and then they have some maquettes, and then they had this really cool... first of all, they had the original head of Lincoln from the World's Fair.
That was one of those things that it was kind of down almost like knee shin height was where it was at in the display. And Tag kind of went past it. I'm like, wait, I'm like, come back here.
Well, the thing
is, I couldn't believe that it was in the original from the 64 World's Fair.
That's the thing is, I feel like I've seen very, very similar to this in other displays. And it's always just been like a head that they've used.
Yeah.
And so the fact that it was like the original, I thought was cool. They had this really neat box, which actually this box looks like it's from like forever ago. But it actually says on the thing that it was recent, because it was actually from 2018, but it looks old. Until you look at it, you realize there's USB ports and stuff on it. And it went over and it controlled this hand that would, like, its fingers would open and close. It's just amazing, some of this stuff. It was neat seeing kind of the behind the scenes. There was a replica of the Herb Ryman sketch of Disney that they used to sell to the bankers at Disneyland. And this really, 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 really big and old-looking Pixar computer.
I want to say it was from like 1988, this Pixar computer.
Yeah, I'm trying to see if in this video if I like got the little placard or not, but I don't think I did.
That's down on the corner.
But
there was also a fun interactive exhibit where you'd walk up to this screen and Rocket was on the screen, and there were cameras that would look at you, and so Rocket would mimic whatever it was you were doing. So if you and it was just face. So if you'd blink or if you'd open your mouth or if you'd wink or like look scared or whatever, he would mimic all of your expressions. And like if you'd turn your head, he'd turn his head. It was really fun to play with.
Yeah, it did a pretty good job. It was pretty cool. The next room, I think, was one of the most themed rooms in the whole place because they made it look kind of like Disneyland. Mm-hmm. They had some Main Street-esque kind of buildings with some lighting and stuff, which is hilarious because when Teresa was afterwards, we went and ate at a pizza place, and Teresa was looking at some of the stuff, and she's like, I didn't even notice all this stuff. Like, I pointed it out to you. What do you think? No, I was taking photos.
I did, but like I noticed it, but didn't notice it, if that makes sense.
There was too much to take in, I understand.
Yeah.
But this room had some really cool stuff. It had a Matterhorn bobsled, one of the older ones. It had a Peter Pan ride vehicle from Disney World. They had...
Land. Disneyland was the Peter Pan vehicle, and the two ride vehicles were Disneyland.
Oh, see, I thought that the Peter Pan one was from Disney World, I thought, but Land. Okay.
Representing, I was pretty, that's why I remembered, because I was very excited that they were both from Disneyland.
Well, there we go.
One of the things that I thought was stupidly cool is they had, so I feel like we've talked about this story before, where there was kind of like a memo about what the plaque would be and what it was originally. So originally it would have said Disneyland, where you leave today and visit the world of fantasy yesterday and tomorrow. And on it, it's scribbled out because Walt didn't like how they had the phrasing of this plaque. And there's kind of sketches of like what the shape would be and all these other little things. But of course, it now, as we all know, famously says, here you leave today and visit the world of yesterday, tomorrow, and fantasy instead. And so it's got like the little like edits in pencil on that plaque. I thought that was so cool.
One of the most amazing things that honestly I didn't even think existed anymore was in this room as well. It was the Engineer Mickey Mouse that was used by Walt Disney on opening day at Disneyland. It is a plush of Mickey Mouse, and there he was sitting in this display case, and I was just flabbergasted that this existed and was here.
Speaking of opening day, there was a 1955 Disneyland guidebook on display, the number one employee badge on display, a parking pass from opening day, like a press parking pass from opening day of Disneyland, as well as one of the original ticket books. So yeah, parking pass, Disneyland premiere Sunday, July 17th, 2:30 p.m. So it was like the press preview parking pass. It's always amazing to me when that's a piece of paper. The fact that that's existed and is in such good condition, that's wild.
Just
crazy.
Do you have more in that room?
We did get to see. Did you talk about the...
I did not.
the little devil guy from Mr. Toad.
In Disney World.
From Disney World, yeah. But he was, I don't know why, but those props are
rest,
really
rest in
see.
Peace, Mr. Toad at Disney World. Mm-hmm. The next room was called the Wonder of Disney. And I took a picture of this poster. Into each of these sections, they had kind of had like a fun, almost attraction poster-like style for each of the rooms. This one was super neat because it had all of these different Disney elements in it that made up a design that looked like the castle. So you have obviously like some castle turrets. You've got some stuff that looks like maybe from Tangled. You've got the Up House kind of in the middle.
That's the London Clock Tower
from Peter Pan. You have the turrets from Agrabah. Mm-hmm. You have the Avengers Tower here.
It looks like Batu maybe. That's a
evaporator, moisture evaporator from Star Wars.
That was the bottom part.
Oh, too. The bottom part as well. Yep, mm-hmm. Jabba's Palace. Is this Frozen?
That's the Ice Palace, Elsa's Ice Palace. You said the Up House? Did you say the Avengers Tower?
I did. All of that. And then they have Mickey Mouse above. But it makes up like the castle. It's super cool. They actually had like posters you could buy with this on it too. But
I'm surprised you didn't come up with one of those.
Yeah. Not that it matters, but I was having a sinus infection that weekend too, still. And so that was also why this episode was a day late. But I was starting towards the end and just like I was hungry and I just kind of, so that's probably why I was just wanting to get out. I was disappointed because we were looking for pins.
I know.
And they didn't have any Disney 100 Chicago Exhibition pins. Yeah. They had a lot of books. They had t-shirts. They had some other things. But anyway, this room had basically
all sorts of
merchandise and stuff through a lot of different things. It also had a photo op with the family Madrigal.
My favorite thing in this room was a little section devoted to Disney films that are more recently getting the love that they so deserve. And
like
like Roger Rabbit, but one of them being Hocus Pocus. And they had the prop, also more lovingly referred to as Book, on display, which was
used by Bette Midler herself.
It looked, costumes or movie props on display is a little like sad, but other times it's really amazing because a lot of times there's so much like detail and intricacy on, especially like costumes, that you just can't see and appreciate on film. So being able to see them up close is sometimes amazing. Sometimes it's shocking, like Tag was saying, with how the stormtroopers look like they were just wearing Vans sneakers.
Right.
So sometimes it's kind of funny that in what they use, but I do have to say, like looking at the stitching on the book and like his eye and all that, it was much more detailed than I remembered than what I remember from seeing it in the film. So it was really, really cool and big, very, very big.
Well, in the adventure room, we actually saw, Barbosa's costume?
Yeah.
And, you know, we've seen a lot of the costume stuff. In fact, I just came across my costuming book that we got at the... Oh, you have it right there. It's amazing that when you're watching a movie, you don't see all the details, but you start looking at it closely and you're like, somebody spent hours doing these little details that nobody's ever going to see. Yeah. And it's just amazing.
You know who sees and appreciates it? The cast and the crew. They see and appreciate it.
Well, and we do when they go on
and
some type of thing.
And we do when it goes on some sort of display tour type thing.
Now,
amazing.
The other thing that was totally different than the Munich one was the very last room had some really cool like pixie dust effect, maybe.
I could have hung out in that room all day.
It was
so cool.
It was nice and dark, and they had like pixie dust and magic kind of things going around, and it would like open up and have all these little scenes from different movies and different Disney things. And then, of course, there was a partner statue there with Walt and Mickey.
Did you notice it was a platinum partner statue? So platinum probably for the 100th anniversary. It was not the normal bronzed version of the partner statue that we're used to seeing. So it was cool. And you could go stand right up next to him. The only other place you can do that is, of course, at the Walt Disney Studios. So that was really, really fun.
As we exited, there was a Disney 100 Chicago step and repeat background thing like you see at like movie premieres. Mm-hmm. And then there was also this lovely postcard of greetings from Chicago with a Goofy in front of it. And Teresa and I, of course, posed to be Goofy in front of it.
I'm surprised you didn't go with that for the episode graphic.
I thought us in the teacup. We didn't talk about the teacup, but there was a teacup in the middle of the Disneyland the theme park section. That was really nice.
Teacup, yep.
Yeah.
Very cool. overall, really amazing exhibit. I honestly could probably go back and look at the timestamps of my photos to see how much time we spent there, because it just, it was incredible.
My last picture was at 1:13. That was us in front of Goofy. And my first picture was on the outside, and that was 10:33.
Oh, we spent it. They said set aside 90 minutes, but you know, us Disney fans, we're overachievers.
It was 10:47 when we were in that front section with Becky Klein talking to us.
We spent a good amount of time.
We did.
A good amount of time. Got our, what was it, like $30 worth for.
And as usual, time flew when we were doing Disney stuff.
It did. It felt like we were in there for, like, while we were in it, like, that we're taking so much time. But then when we were done, it felt like, oh, we're done already? That was no time at all. But just, oh, I don't even know how many different things there were on exhibit. We could probably go through.
The website says 250 plus magical artifacts and 14 interactive installations.
There you go. It was incredible, though. We'll have the link in the show notes for anybody that's interested in the Chicago exhibit. Again, it is making its way to Kansas City. I think like later this spring is when it's going to be there. So if you have a chance, we highly, highly, highly recommend you check this out. Again, from what we learned in the pre-show from Becky Klein is that this is going to be traveling for 5 years. And this, of course, it's only been traveling for, this is year two, the start of year two now. So there's plenty of time to catch this. Hopefully it'll be coming to a city near you to check out yourself.
Yeah, super cool. Highly recommend it. Both versions.
It's okay. I'll be the only weekly tier without an answer. Make sure you send your questions to Producer James or Producer Vern at trivia@doweekly.net.
Welcome back to Trivia Land. How do you feel? How do you think you did? You think you got all the right answers? You feeling pretty good?
I'm pretty confident about the bonus question. Yeah. The rest of it we'll have to see.
Yeah, bonus question for sure.
All right, well, let's dive right in and see how it went for you. That first listener submitted question from listener Todd B. In Toontown, during the holidays, you can find the third little piggy bank decked out with the currency of Toontown. Who is featured on the $1 bill? Teresa said Roger Rabbit. Tag said Mickey Mouse. The correct answer that we were looking for was Roger Rabbit.
Woo-hoo! Teresa, good job.
I'm trying to find a picture of it. It's like I see it in my brain, but I'm wondering if like what I see in my brain is what it actually looks like.
Well, what's the name of the bank? You should type in the name of the bank.
Yeah, what was it? The three little piggies?
Or third little piggy?
Third
bank.
Little piggy. Yep, Mickey's on the coins.
Oh.
There it is.
Well, there we go. All right.
Your second listener submitted question from listener Matt M., the Nebraska State Poet. Pinocchio's load-in has a mural. It has one signpost with arrows pointing in three directions. What does each arrow point to? You were on the right track, knowing that the arrows point to locations throughout the movie. You guessed the village, Pleasure Island, and the sea. The correct answer that we were looking for was Stromboli's Theater, The School, and Pleasure Island.
Dang. Okay.
So you got a third.
Although technically, if you really look at it, it just says pleh.
Yeah.
So you can presume it's pointing to Pleasure Island. Your third regular round question submitted by listener Donna S. Who is credited with the design of the original Disneyland logo? Both of you guessed Herb Ryman. The correct answer that we were looking for is Jacques Rupp.
Did not know that.
And I will note before anybody sends an email about anything, I do want to make note of the wording there, credited with the original Disneyland logo.
Sure.
Gotcha. I was not able to find anything from Disneyland.com or any sources like that saying that they're giving them credit. But it is all over the rest of the internet that everybody else gives him credit.
Well, it is tough. So, like, I was just pulling up the images of the original drawing that was taken to the banks to then, you know, sell the idea of Disneyland. And some of these things, they didn't really sign their name to them necessarily. It may just says, you know, so a lot of some of this could have gotten lost in history because it doesn't say specifically who did it.
Right.
It just might say like Disney artists. This kind of plays back into our discussion topic for the week is at the Disney 100 exhibit, we got to see a lot of originals, but not everybody was credited and had their names. There were ones that did have the names, but there was also a lot that just said Disney studio artist because they don't, you know, because it just kind of gets lost to time as to who it was. So I could see how this would be, could have been one of those things. So it's good that there's people out there that are still trying to
nail these folks down.
Yeah, figure out who was the person responsible for it.
Yeah.
Very cool. And your fourth and final regular round question from listener Michael R. Mr. Toad may have been found guilty, but he apparently didn't have an attorney. In Disney California Adventure, there is a reference to a law firm or counselors at law. What is the name of the firm? Where is the reference located? And what is the significance of those names? You knew that it was Buena Vista Street.
Woohoo!
Good job.
And after much discussion, that was what you knew.
Yep.
The correct answer that I was looking for is Lessing, Kamen, and James. Or Lessing, Kamen, and James. K-A-M-E-N. And James. It's a sign on Buena Vista Street in the Sepulveda building. These are the three men who played central roles in the legal history of Walt Disney.
Mm.
Gunther Lessing was a lawyer hired by Walt to protect the copyrights of Mickey Mouse. He rose to become a company vice president and general counsel. Kay Kamen was the exclusive representative of Disney character merchandising from 1932 to 1949, and Cyril James was a London-based lawyer responsible for Disney's international merchandising and film distribution from 1938 to 1972.
Wow.
Very cool.
So the next time you're in DCA, you're on Buena Vista Street, and you notice that sign, you know that a lot of the copyright and everything that kept Disney profitable owed to those three guys.
Very cool.
And your bonus question, submitted by listener Tim M. There were a few nitpicky little, you screwed up one word here or there, but you nailed it. Very well done. I think the listeners deserve a reprise. If you
no,
I think in the
I
words
they can, I,
in the words of Jack Sparrow, I will not be doing that again.
That's the beautiful thing about the podcast. They can always rewind and listen to it.
Somebody's going to somebody's going to like clip that out and play it over and over again. I just know it.
Maybe it'll become a ringtone or something.
Oh my!
Hopefully not.
It's going to end up becoming a ringtone.
Do people still do that? Are we
that old? I don't think people
do
ringtones anymore.
Do ringtones? I don't know.
It could become the new theme music.
Oh
no!
Let's not.
Can that be the new theme music?
Oh boy!
No.
Sidel, can we make this happen?
No, Sidel, no.
All right. Well, listeners, how do you think they did? How did you do listening at home? Do you have some awesome questions that you'd love to hear asked sometime in the future? Well, please feel free to send those in to trivia@dlweekly.net.
Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
A special thank you to Sidel for editing the podcast.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us. And we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.